order. We have work sessions scheduled on House Bill 2264, 2529, and 2282, and a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 149. What I would like to do is work us through. Can I have you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, my name is Mark Overbeck, and I'm legislative assistant to Representative Nancy Peterson.
And you're nodding your head to Representative Mannix's
motion. Yes, Representative Peterson has no objection to that.
Thank you. The motion then, as amended, is before the subcommittee. Is there any objection to Representative Mannix's motion? It's adopted. Representative Mannix?
I move the bill as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Is there discussion of the motion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Clark?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Baum?
Yes.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Now, the pièce de résistance, House Bill 2282. Representative Calori.
Little bill.
Madam Chair, if I could, I would just like to run through some of the amendments to clarify what has happened, what is going on. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have several sets of amendments before you. If you look at the dash 6, this basically embodies the amendments that we adopted at the last meeting. You will also have before you a draft from the Department of Justice dated 4/17/89. This includes the amendments that would be proposed by the Department of Justice and the Governor's Office. You may remember at the last meeting, they were still seeing if they could reach some kind of mutually satisfactory agreement on some particular issues. Then you will also see the dash 9 amendments. The dash 9 amendments include what's in 2286 plus the amendments that we have received from the Department of Justice. So it would include, if you decided to adopt the Department of Justice amendments that have been agreed to with the Governor's Office, it would include those amendments in the dash 9.
Plus the dash 6 as well?
Yes, correct.
And what are the dash 10?
The dash 10, I believe, would relate to.
Okay.
I want to make sure we're clear here, Council. The committee has no reason to consider the dash 6 amendments because they are folded into the dash 9 amendments. Is that your impression?
Madam Chair, right. What would the dash, what you would have is dash 6 plus Department of Justice equals dash 9. Dash 6 have been adopted. The Department of Justice memo that you have, they have not been adopted. If they are adopted, they will be. They're already incorporated in dash 9. Legislative Council's office was a little bit ahead of us, but.
Okay. Thank you. Dash 10.
Madam Speaker, I'm Ted Calori, State Representative from Washington County. I'm very grateful for you to allow us to approach the committee at this late date. I have been shepherding through a separate bill, House Bill 3371, that I really get no credit for. It is the person to my right who really should get credit for it. As I know all of you know, it relates to a similar subject, namely forfeitures, but in this case, forfeitures of automobiles where there has been a driving while suspended already having been acted on. The person to my right is Judge William Keyes from Multnomah County. I have been going around these halls talking to various people about this subject as though I knew something about it and as though I had played a major role, and Judge Keyes really gets the credit for it. At the suggestion of the committee chairman, we have prepared and are ready to present to you today the dash 10 amendments, would take the essence of 3371 and put it into 2282. And I am very understanding of the fact that a lot of people have worked on 2282 for a number of months, but I think that this can, in fact, be accomplished. What we also have, in order to try to minimize all of your time, is a summary of what 3371 contains. There is also, and I'll have Judge Keyes go through and follow through these documents. There's also a comparison of 2282 to 3371, and you will also find just distributed a letter from Earl Blumenauer, who had intended for weeks now to be here at this date, but then when the day finally came, he was needed to work on budget matters back in Portland. So I think you will find that this concept is very much supported by the general public and by law enforcement, by the Mad Mothers Group, and by a lot of other people. And Judge Keyes, I believe, has a list of judges also that he'd like to discuss with you. I'd like to turn it over now, if I might, to Judge Keyes to ask to briefly go through and explain the concepts to you so that you can understand what it is we're proposing.
I'm not sure that you take it as credit rather than blame when I'm giving you a 55-page amendment to 2282.
But you're going to take it one way or the other.
But I'm afraid I'm going to take it one way or the other.
Could you identify
I'm
yourself?
I'm Bill Keyes. I'm a district court judge in Multnomah County. A year and a half ago, I started thinking about this concept, as I said, in felony court processing driving while suspended cases, where we were going through an incredibly elaborate ritual costing a lot of dollars, and defendants as a group were paying absolutely no attention. The reason, of course, is that they're with the jail space problems we have in this state, there's very little we can do at the end of our incredibly elaborate ritual, which we call a felony trial, to let people know that their behavior is inappropriate. So I decided that, after talking to a number of other judges, that perhaps the answer was to use the civil law rather than the criminal law to encourage people to quit driving.
Thank you.
When they're suspended.
No, hang on.
Let me, without going into greater detail about why the present system doesn't work, take you for a few minutes through what I see to be some differences between, well, first let me take you through the essence of 3371. It is now our amendment -10. Police officer who stops a driver who's suspended seizes tows and stores the vehicle, makes arrangements for that. After notice, a hearing's held, either through a DMV hearing or in a pretty summary jury trial, very similar to a landlord and tenant case, to determine whether the driver was suspended and whether they had noticed the suspension and whether they were driving on a public highway. If they find that the driver was in violation, and under this bill we're limiting the effect of this to those people who are suspended because of a prior conviction for drunk driving, then a number of things can happen. If it's the first offense, they can get the car back by paying all the costs, towing, storage, hearing costs, and a $500 civil penalty. If it's not the first offense, the car is forfeited. There are a number of provisions in the bill that addressing the question of people who loan their cars to people who turn out to be suspended for drunk driving. Basically, those people can get their car back after a couple of weeks, but it's going to cost them the cost of storage and towing up until that time, and then we give them a right to sue the person who was driving and cost them the money. There are a series of relatively elaborate provisions to help as much as we can security interest holders in the vehicle. There's a number of provisions about early release of the vehicle. Security interest holders have a right to sue the suspended driver again. Security interest holders have a right to proceed on their own to foreclose on the vehicle while this action is going on. Finally, we're at least proposing to decriminalize this type of driving while suspended. And the attempt here is more than anything to make the bill as revenue neutral as we can by taking the funds that we previously used for court-appointed attorney's fees, court costs, and that sort of thing, and saving those funds and having those funds available to cover the costs of this forfeiture proceeding. The first question that's going to come up in this meeting, and it should, is why can't you do this through by means of our existing procedure set out in 2282. The problem here is that the two bills are designed to address two different problems, and as a result, the procedures don't fit very well together. 2282, to oversimplify, is designed to forfeit instruments of crime and the results of crime, mainly narcotics crimes, and thus to both punish the people that economically gain from them and to raise revenue for the state of Oregon and its various local governments and constituent parts. On the other hand, 3371 is designed to forfeit vehicles of suspended drivers, essentially using civil law to punish people who would otherwise be criminals. The next step is real important. 2282 is used selectively. Local governments are going to decide which assets they're going to proceed on based on the value of those assets and whether it justifies the costs of the circuit court type proceeding that will result.
Judge Keyes, let me interrupt for a second.
Yep.
We have struggled with this record here that we're creating, and I'm going to ask Pete Shepard to speak to this later. This is really a concern that the committee, in I think four prior hearings that we've held on 2282, has held on the incursion of forfeiture as a statewide mechanism. And I mean, maybe that term incursion is too blunt, and it's not really as accurate as I'd like to be. But this is a new tool, and one of the cautions that we're operating under is a constitutional caution, which was raised by Representative Clark and by Representative Edmondson, which has to do with a prohibition on holding the property of people who've been convicted of crimes forfeit. And I just want to back you up for a second on a statement that you made a second ago on the design of these amendments being to punish criminals civilly. I know that you didn't mean that the way it sounded, and
no,
I'm concerned about legislative history that we're creating here.
What I think I said was, I should even clarify that, is that I was going to have civil consequences for people who would otherwise be punished as criminals. There are civil consequences for forfeiture is a civil consequence, which would apply to people who would otherwise be punished as criminals, and that's, I think, the intent of what we're trying to do.
Sure.
Representative Clark.
I think that's especially accurate in 3371, which, as I understand it, as you mentioned, also decriminalizes driving while suspended. So by definition, these people would have been treated as criminals but for this bill, and we're moving into a civil approach. So I think the structure of the bill is safe in that regard, but I noticed at least three or four sets of eyebrows go up when you made that comment a minute ago.
Probably was inarticulate in the way I phrased it. On 3371, it's designed to apply uniformly. In other words, if you were suspended for DUIL and you're picked up while you were driving during that suspension period, the bill applies. And that's the reason that there ends up being two types of procedures to resolve contested hearings. 2282, in a contested hearing situation, involves a regular standard jury trial in district or circuit court. 3371 ends up with either a DMV hearing or a real expedited district court trial, very similar to an FBD case. That difference is important because if you're talking about cash or a house, as you often are in 2282, there's not a lot of storage costs on parking cash in somebody's safe. If you're parking cars on somebody's lot, there does tend to be storage costs, and I think it's real important that we dispose of these cases as quickly as possible to cut storage costs both for the people involved and for the Motor Vehicles Division. That's probably the one feature that makes 2282's procedures real hard to apply to these driving while suspended cases. Yes.
Again, these are the dash 10 amendments that we're considering to
2282. I'll use dash 10 rather than 3371.
It's a little bit confusing.
Okay.
This isn't a hearing on 3371.
No, I understand. I'll use dash 10 amendments.
I just... I. I'm not clear. That's another question that we need to explore later on. I know that Legislative Council has worked to make the bill internally consistent, but I've got some questions. When you're done with your testimony, I've got some questions. I'd like to walk through the amendments with you and look at the areas where we ran into consistency problems, because we do have parallel procedures being set up within the context of one enactment here.
That's really all I plan to say about the essence of 3371 and why, at least in my opinion, the present procedures of 2282 are not going to be very effective in dealing with this particular problem. In other words, if we try to use 2282 procedures for the Dash 10 Amendment DWS problem, it's going to cost the state a lot of money because they're just slower.
Madam Chair. Judge, can we spin that out a little bit? I'm not sure
why.
I'm sitting
slower
here scratching my head thinking, why couldn't we just say that?
That would be the first question.
Yeah, why can't we just say that the procedures, that we're going to do the Dash 10 goals, but we're going to use the procedures in 2282? Why won't that work?
Well, as I calculate out the Dash 10 timeline, we're going to get cases resolved somewhere between 10 and 60 days. A circuit court jury trial under 2282 is going to be a year away. Now, if you're paying, I don't think this is going to happen real often, but it doesn't have to happen real often. If you're paying $20 a day for storage, the difference between 30 days and a year is real substantial. Now, this bill does have early release provisions to cut storage costs for everybody, but even the risk of one-year waits for jury trials, I think, could put the costs of the Dash 10 amendments beyond where the state ought to be willing to take it. I think it would just be too expensive because it's slow. There's a different kind of notice that's given. 2282, you have regular notices preparing for a regular lawsuit. In the Dash 10 amendments, you've got notice through DMV, very similar to a breath test hearing under Senate Bill 710. You've got DMV hearing process rather than having a lot of contested hearings working through the court again in an attempt to get it resolved quickly.
Now, sure. I think these were on my desk.
Late.
It was about noon when I took my first look at, in their 55 pages. Do you know where the notice provision is? Or maybe Representative Calori can help us out here.
Section 36.
Does this notice provision replace a former notice provision in the original House bill?
2282, you mean?
In 2282.
No.
So this will be a separate notice when we have vehicle forfeiture.
Vehicle forfeiture for driving while suspended as a result of DUII. In other words, these notice provisions apply only under these circumstances and don't affect 2282 at all. That makes sense? Okay.
I'm wondering if it makes sense to just use this notice provision, but I'm just really just looking at it. It's registered mail notice within 10 days of impoundment or seizure.
Police officer sends notice regular mail. DMV sends a safety valve notice registered mail.
Are there other questions for Judge Keyes or for Representative Calori? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judge, we're also considering another bill that, has to do with sobriety stop points with civil sanctions. And it's somewhat controversial for a variety of reasons. But how do you see the Dash 10 amendments dovetailing with that concept? Because I assume that a number of people who would fall into the trap on the civil sanction road stops, roadblocks, would, in addition to driving under the influence, would perhaps be driving while suspended as a result of a prior driving under the influence. And I'm wondering, I don't know whether you've seen that bill, I don't know whether you can comment.
I've looked at a summary of it, I have not okay. seen the bill.
Conceptually, I don't see any inconsistency between those two concepts, and I'm wondering if you do. Procedurally, perhaps, we'd have to
think there are some different procedures, but I don't see any problems conceptually between the two. I'm not familiar enough with the other bill to be able to address the details. But, no, I don't see any major differences between this and that.
And one last question.
Yes, Representative Clark.
One of the things that I've been turning around in my mind as we explore this this forfeiture issue and an attempt to get at through civil sanctions activity that would otherwise be criminal. In criminal law, as you know far better than I do, there's a constitutional rule of proportionality. And I can never exactly tell you what it is, but it has something to do with the punishment needs to fit the crime. And I guess I want to explore with you a little bit in a theoretical sense whether that rule would also apply to a forfeiture. And that, by the way, the question goes not just for the Dash 10 amendments, also goes for the Dash 9 amendments. At what point with a civil sanction do you have to consider that proportionality rule as well?
I would address that question this way. As of now, if somebody violates what we would be taking their car away for, the legislature has said we could keep them in jail for 5 years and fine them $100,000. This is obviously less than that by a long shot. The problem is not what we could do, but what we are doing. So this is a substantially lesser sanction than punishment as a Class C felony. The problem is that Class C felonies aren't working real well right now because we got too many of them.
And I guess to follow up on that, I'm thinking about just my situation. You know, would I rather be charged with driving while suspended or driving under the influence of intoxicants, knowing what Oregon's criminal justice system looks like, or where I'd rather have you take my car away for 45 days? I'll tell you which I'd rather have, because I know which one's going to hurt the most. And
right. It's too bad, but it's right. That's why we're here. The other thing I do want to mention is that
go ahead.
There are circumstances where you have the one fluke, the sad fluke, the one person, the only time they ever drove, they got picked up, it's a close call, and we all feel bad about that one case in 100 where it's a total fluke, and that's why I put in the provision that the first time they're picked up, they can get the car back with the same penalty. I figure if they don't learn by that time, then taking their car away is probably their fault and their problem.
What is the number of cases that Multnomah County has every month that would fall under the provisions of
I can tell you a little bit statewide even because I've talked at some length with DMV about this. As the bill was originally drafted, we were going to address all misdemeanor and felony driving while suspended cases. After some discussions with some representatives of the governor's office and DMV, we are going to, and by the way, there is a minor change in the bill to get to where we want to be, and everybody agrees where we want to be. We're going to limit it to driving under the influence cases, or people suspended for driving under the influence, which means about 4,000 cases a year statewide, rather than 13,000.
Yeah, that was the number I'd heard earlier, was 1,000 a month in Multnomah County. Or was that 1,000 a month statewide?
More like 1,000 a month statewide.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I guess the next question on these cases is how are we going to pay for the cost of impounding the cars, and what is the structure in the amendment that tells us who pays the cost?
If anyone gets their car back, they're going to pay for it, okay? Whether it's a security interest holder picking a car up early after 3 days or somebody picking their car up after 30 days, if they want the car back, they're going to have to pay the storage, towing, and hearing costs.
Do you know what that is? Do you have some idea what that is?
I don't have. It varies county to county, for one thing. What could storage be up to? $20-$25 a day, $30 a day. That's why we, after a lot of discussion with DMV, have got so many early release provisions built into the bill. I can go into those in detail if you want, but I suspect nobody wants to be here until after 6.
Well, I think we want to stay here till we get it right.
Absolutely.
The other question there is, what is it? Is it a possibility here that there might be cars that nobody wants to pick up? And
sure.
And in that case, what happens? Who picks up the tab on that?
The state sells the car and pays the storage cost.
The state picks up the bill.
Right, and sells the car.
You're coming very close on the heels. Last meeting we had on this bill, Judge, and you have no way of knowing this is kind of a setup deal. The chair was particularly interested in forwarding some thoughts that had been suggested by one of the co-chairs of Ways and Means with regard to having local government provide some of this forfeiture, which is to raise money. I mean, your interpretation is to raise money. I've never heard so many impoverished local enforcement people talking about how little money they would raise. And the object there was to give some assistance to the general fund, and it sounds like one of the consequences here is that there's going to be some impact on the general fund. We're probably talking about Ways and Means taking a look at,
I think we are,
at how big that impact is, and have maybe Representative Kalori, have you had an opportunity to talk to our fiscal analysts about what the size of the bill is here?
No, I have not talked to those people. We have talked extensively with Department of Motor Vehicles people who originally had an estimate of impact that was quite astronomical, and then with further explanation and with the changes that have been made to it, you know, I think that even though they may not have a precise number, at least the feeling is that the impact is substantially less. But I have not done what you suggested.
I think one of the things we have to remember is that if every driving while suspended case has, say, $200 in court-appointed attorney's fees and another $300 or $400, $500 to process it through the court system, we're going to have some savings on one side and some costs on the other. But as far as the details of that, I don't know.
$5 a day for a month is going to cost a little bit more than $200 in indigent defense fees. Just on my sort of brutal.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm saying that at each stage of the proceedings, for almost anyone, there are provisions under all of these circumstances to obtain a release of the car from the lot. Even a person whose car is going to be forfeited can enter into an agreement with the department to stipulate that the car can be sold, and then they'll fight over the proceeds, for instance. Those people who have loaned a car to someone can get the car back after 10 days, as soon as we're sure that we know who all the possible people with an interest are, can get their car back within 10 days rather than 30 days.
How can the state toll the running of the bill? Say, let's say after 30 days nobody has called the number to release the car. Is there a way for the state, since we're going to be standing in a position of the responsible party here with the general fund really standing behind this, how does the state say, we want the car out of there right now, enough is enough, you know, we've paid
they can
30,
make arrangements to sell
days.
It. As far as I'm concerned, DMV, if they
wanted to make the necessary arrangements could take the car out of storage themselves and put it someplace. I don't know that they want to be in the storage business, but as soon as somebody has not asked for a hearing, okay, if no one has asked for a hearing, then the and that's another technical amendment that we're going to add to this bill.
No one has asked for a hearing within what's the time frame?
Is it I in think the, if after amendment? All the notices, it would be less than 30 days, but more than 20 days, depending on...
Is that in here?
That part's in.
That kind of a spaghetti sauce here. It's in there.
It's all right.
Okay.
The provision that DMV has proposed to require people to ask for a hearing rather than holding one automatically is at Legislative Council's office, but not a part of this bill, although everyone, all the participants to date, have agreed that on the essence of the language and the fact it ought to be put in this bill. Okay, there are three things that I think I should alert you to. One is the change that we are going to limit it to DYLs. The other one is the provisions for asking for a hearing.
Sorry, you're talking about an agreement of parties, and again, 2282 originally was